you know, you don't have to have given birth to understand that kind of like joy at having something delicious. So I just really like it as a piece of very human advertising.
This is the Media Freak Podcast, the latest, greatest and newest podcast created by media people who are just a little bit freaky. We're not the big dogs, we're the ones in the media trenches who tell you how it really is. Each episode, you'll hear from us with a roundup of media news, our expert guests, and some anonymous sources about the freaky world of media. So who's on the mic? It's me, your host, Harriet from Publicis. Oh, hello.
Not the pause.
The millennial pause.
Jack from Craft.
Salve.
Buki from Wavemaker.
I'm going to try and do a hello.
And Charlie from Show Heroes.
Hello.
In today's episode, we talk agency acquisitions, the breakup of Google, and crown this week's Freak of the Week. But first, this week's podcast comes from Global.
Woo-hoo.
That's right. We've stepped into the heart of broadcasting in Leicester Square, where world-class talent walk each day, including us.
Yeah.
So huge thanks to our friends at Global for hosting us. Big up, big up.
And thank you, Mo Gilligan, for kindly lending us his studio.
Mm. It's lovely and air-conditioned.
We did start in Vogue Williams' studio, I must say.
Yeah. I'm more of a Mo than a Vogue.
No really. One's adopted I'm the both. Irish accent, though.
No, fortunately not.
Not yet, no.
Oh, nice.
In the news this week, in the luxury category, according to news reports, LVMH strikes a 10-year sponsorship deal with Formula One. The sponsorship deal will replace long-term sponsor Rolex and will cover Louis Vuitton, Moët Hennessy and Tag Heuer brands. I'm very sorry for all the French listeners that we may have that
assumed,
no longer listen.
I assumed you have a Tag Heuer.
Oh, well, I have a Cartier, darling. Even better. Even better.
Very nice.
So my question is, what will this mean for Rolex? They've been a partner of F1 since 2013. And what will this mean for the LVMH brand portfolio?
I can't speak for Rolex, but I can speak for LVMH. I think the luxury segment is in a bit of flux at the minute. I think given the current economic climates that we're seeing, luxury is often the first thing to go. So we're seeing, you know, revenues decrease across the category. However, LVMH continues to stay at the top of its game, and I actually think it's because it's doubling down on this sport fitting. I think luxury is forgetting that it's luxury. It's trying to change to the audience kind of brand or what audience like. So, you know, some brands going for gaming or whatever, which is great. I think brands should be there, but they're really sticking to their guns and they're doubling down. I think, what is it? 100 million wow. euros per year for the next 10 years, blending entertainment, elite athletes and success all in one space. I think this is a fantastic space for them to be in. And they're just oozing luxury energy, I think, with something like this.
I mean, it as a sport, it is at the upper, like, premium end of sport. You only have to look at, like, Monaco and the types of people who actually visit, who go and actually watch. It's super premium. The thing that I was really impressed by is that they're talking about it as a portfolio play. So it's not just kind of giving it the holding company badging exercise. The last thing you ever really want to do with one of these partnerships is just badge everything up and leave it. They're properly integrating in all the way through to, like, you know, the champagne that they're going to be spraying at the end.
Exactly.
Is going to be Moët, which I love. And there's going to be loads of... Sorry,
it's
Moët.
Moët.
It's Moët.
You pronounce the T.
Since
really?
When? Yeah. Who said that?
Oh, I don't know what to believe anymore.
No, sorry.
Moët.
Sorry, who
what
said
next?
That? Who said,
is it's a thing. Anyway, we're going to get down the...
Just,
anyway,
just before we get off this, I want to say, just to your point about getting all the way through, because they've already had a foot in the door. I think I remember doing a lot of research previously and they were already making like the trophies for, so Tiffany would make the trophies for F1 and other sports. Mm. And then the trophy cases and, like, as Jack kind of mentioning, the champagne that they're spraying, all of that. It's a huge play and just seamlessly blends their brand with the property. Everyone's happy. I think this is a really nice play by them.
Well, poor Rolex, but they will always remain timeless, if you pardon the pun.
Unlike that pun.
In network agency news, the Publicis Pac-Man, quote Jack Winter, strikes again. Publicis Group acquires Mars United Commerce to create an industry-leading connected commerce solution. Now, before I talk around Mars United Commerce, I will admit that I leveraged ChatGPT to help provide a few stats on what Mars United Commerce was and swiftly questioned the validity of the summary that came back. So I'm just going to read you this.
Okay.
a futuristic commercial entity aimed at establishing and managing trade operations on Mars, facilitating both intraplanetary and Earth-to-Mars exchanges, focusing on infrastructure, resource management, and supporting human settlement and economic activities on the red planet.
AI is not coming for our jobs,
isn't it? I'm not being funny, but the publicist expansion has got out of hand, that they've already made it to
interplanetary.
Mars. Yeah, interplanetary publicists.
Well, I can assure our podcast listeners, sorry, that publicists are not yet planning media on another planet, but they have in fact acquired one of the largest independent commerce marketing companies to drive growth for brands. So, as quoted in the press release, the combined forces of Publicis Group and Mars will allow clients to influence the complete commerce journey for billions of global shoppers.
I mean, I, for one, would like to, you know, for fear of being reprimanded like last time, I want to congratulate Harriet's overlords. Well done, everyone at Publicis.
Yeah, I think this is one of the big sort of battlegrounds at the moment, isn't it? Retail media is upwards of $140 billion a year, I think it's meant to get to. So, was it Omnicom last year bought Digital Flywheel, or Flywheel Digital, that was it, for $835 million. So Publicis getting in on the act and making even more acquisitions. But yeah, as I say, retail media feels like a big battleground.
In out-of-home news, Network Rail has pulled the plug on a huge ad board at Euston Station in London. This is following news reports that Euston Station... Why are you laughing?
I'm just laughing because it's just funny, isn't it?
Oh, right. I thought you were laughing at me saying in London.
No.
Not everyone may know. We may have international clientele. This is following news reports that Euston Station is overcrowded after receiving criticism from both passengers, do-gooders and travel watchdogs. So, Vicky, you've obviously got a point of view on this, so tell me, what do you think?
I think that it's a flimsy excuse saying that it is it was written that it's been shut down to reduce overcrowding. That's the technical term as why they've said that. I think that's a flimsy excuse. I think you're right, loads of complaints have come out. You took down the passenger information board and replaced it with a big advertising board. Like, what did they think was going to happen?
Yeah.
So, personally, and I think I read a couple of different articles, and, you know, we all love our out-of-home peeps, but if they refuse to comment, it's kind of telling that they kind of knew what they were doing at the time. It was not the right play. So, I won't be surprised if I don't see it go back up.
Because the screen is maintained and managed by JCD. That's JC Deco. What? Not everyone knows these acronyms.
No,
there are plenty of acronyms in media. Yeah. Go on, Jack, have your say on this.
No, I was going to say it's funny because it's basically a similar screen to the one in Waterloo, but Waterloo is massive, so you can have a massive, great big screen because you can keep passenger boards there. But in Euston, it's darker, and let's face it, I've never seen a happy person
dingy.
In Euston.
Stress no, awful.
You're waiting for your £490 train to Manchester. It's 3 days late. You've got and you've just got like OVO energy, like OVO, like, you know, flashing in your face. It's like it's kind of sensory overload.
There's not more fights, really, because it is when you know your train comes up on the board, people make a beeline for the platform.
Sorry, I've just missed such a good pun that I could have introed that news story. Euston, we have a problem.
I do think it is funny, though. It's like classic government using advertising as a bit of a political patsy. Like, it's an easy way to score points with people who are like, oh, advertising's evil. Because the thing is, ultimately, if they just made the trains run on time and gave people proper information, then
they
people
sold
wouldn't
that.
Care so much.
They would surely they would have kind of, like, JC Deco would have paid them for that space. So they're like, oh, let's grab the money.
Maybe.
And then all of a sudden, when they realise that people actually want the information board and not an advertising board, now they're reviewing it. Mm. How convenient.
Well, what does this mean for existing placement books throughout the Q4? Well, does that make any sense then?
Yeah, it did. Well, I mean, you're just going to have to look for other sort of screens in similar environments.
Well, it's a JCD problem. They'll need to rehome them, won't they?
I can't imagine that JCD are too pleased with it, let's put
it
that way.
No. Well, in other out-of-home news, globally recognised FMCG brand Heinz has been accused of perpetuating negative and racist stereotype ads appearing on the London Underground. So the Tube ad actually features an interracial couple at their wedding reception. Is that politically correct to say?
Interracial couple. Yeah.
With both the white groom's parents at the top table, but only the black bride's mother features. So Hines has actually apologised.
Nice.
I'll put this to you guys. Do we think it was a bad move and should have been caught earlier?
I don't really think it should have been caught earlier. Stuff like this always just makes me think who was in the multiple rooms that led to sign-off. Like, it wasn't just one person. There were a lot of people involved in the sign-off process for this, I can only imagine. And when I was trying to think of, like, a way to make this kind of make sense, I could only think of, like, what if one of the models in the advert had had a Hitler-style moustache? Do you think someone would have caught that? Someone would have been like, that guy's looking like Hitler.
Maybe.
You think they might not have caught that?
I'm joking.
Yeah, they would have caught that. And it's because that is culturally significant in everyone's mind. But when you're in a room where, like, you know, the people planning are not that diverse, this isn't culturally significant to them. They are maybe not aware, because it's not touched their lives, how that stereotype can negatively impact people. So that's why you kind of need that inclusive planning team. You need, you know, some people at some stage to be able to see and be like, ah, this is going to be a bit of a problem. They could say, actually, it's not a problem, and you're away. But I think you definitely need more diverse people in at least one of those rooms to cast an eye.
I mean, it's been, what, 6 years since the Pepsi BLM sort of Kendall Jenner ad. It's been, I don't know, however many years since. Do you remember there was, like, I think it was the H&M Cheeky Monkey t-shirt ad, and it was like a similar thing where it's another one where it's like, it's not kind of necessarily immediately obvious.
Yeah, it wasn't on purpose.
Like, but there needs to be more of an awareness of it. It's just like, we just need to be a bit of unconscious bias training would help, but also, like, more broadly, you know, foster diverse talent and have it throughout the layers of your company. And then you're going to, you know, have those people with that awareness. Yeah.
They've apologised, but it doesn't... Well, the news reports I've seen suggest that they're not intending to change it. They're just apologising for what it may insinuate.
Which I do kind of... I get that. Like I said, it's not like it was... Like you say, you know, the Cheeky Monkey kind of H&M debacle that we kind of saw, or even the Balenciaga kind of hypersexualization of, like, kids' wear kind of thing. It's not like that. So I can get why they're like, we're not going to tear it down. And I understand the apology. But I think the main kind of takeaway from us is that, you know, we are not the average consumers. Once you've worked in Adland, you're not the average consumer. And we do have a responsibility to ensure that we're not perpetuating harmful stereotypes, even if it's unintended.
Yeah.
But they've said sorry.
Yeah.
And hopefully they've learned and they're, you know, their planning crews are a little bit more diverse in the future.
In other media news, Microsoft is due to make a strategic shift in its retail media approach. It's reportedly shutting down its retail media business, PromoteIQ. PromoteIQ was acquired by Microsoft in 2019 and provides retail media technology that enables retailers to create advertising programs on their e-commerce sites. But Microsoft is now directing clients to use Criteo's platform. So Microsoft hasn't officially announced its closure, but it has been reportedly laying off employees and shifting focus away. So, Buki, you're nodding with interest there. So do you have a point of view on this?
No, yeah, definitely. I think in terms of, like, retail media, I think we spoke about it at the top of the show. It's becoming such a key point of plans in general. I think, 20% of all retail journeys are, like, e-commerce led. And so that means that there's a huge scale for growth in that space, even though we are still doing so much in there. So I think one of the reasons why Microsoft probably is doing something like this is the fact that a lot of these retail companies are in-housing this anyway. You know, you've only got to look as far as Tesco, Nectar, Boots, all of them, man, are absolutely flying with this. They don't need to access kind of Microsoft and Microsoft tools to do this. But I think them pushing Criteo is useful because they're working with the likes of Walmart and Target and Staples in the States. So they are going to be able to combine that audience and that inventory of Criteo with the Microsoft advertising and audience network. So that could be useful for some people, but I think the biggest and best out in the retail world are in-housing this anyway. So that's all I had to say on that.
Sorry, Buki, your points are valid. I just easily
amused.
Easily amused.
You're
going
to have to record with a blindfold on soon. Yeah.
It's just it's a bit of just consolidation in the space, really, isn't it? Which is very, very unsurprising. I think these things come in phases and we move on.
We do.
Well, remember, you can have your say and respond to any of the topics and stories we discuss on the podcast. Email us at info.tmfpod@gmail.com. That's info.tmfpod@gmail.com.
I have not checked that inbox in weeks.
Bookie,
I'm so sorry. If anyone's actually reached out, I will be getting back to that soon. Sorry.
We need to appoint a new email secretary.
Yeah.
I'm better at emails, I think.
Okay, you can log in.
You can't be any worse.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on to our Freak of the Week. Every episode, one of us will talk about a campaign or an activation and will be tasked with justifying why it should be crowned the Freak of the Week. So who has the potential Freak of the Week this week?
I have taken the reins of this one this week.
Okay,
thank God for that.
Give it to us, give it to us.
Okay, so this Freak of the Week, and you may have seen it, is the Burger King Out of Home campaign featuring new mothers. So just to set the scene, you have got kind of brand new mothers cradling their new child and eating like a Burger King burger with the caption or the copy just like arrived at 12:59. I think they missed a trick on saying bundles of joy. I think that would have been a bit cleverer, but that's by the by. Anyway, so I wanted to kind of put this one to the crowd because it's essentially divided the internet with people saying that it isn't the kind of thing that should be advertised alongside like new mothers. They need like nutrient dense food and blah, blah, blah. And other people saying or having an opposing view. So it's a very simple campaign. That's literally it. So before I gave you my take on it, I was interested in where you guys netted out on that type of advertising. You know, I know we spoke recently on HFSS, I don't know. Which one is it?
High fat sugar.
Yeah, on that kind of advertising anyway. So where do we in this room sit on that?
I like it. I think we spend too much time often trying to do what is perceived to be the right thing when in a situation like that, when someone's just been in labour for 16 hours or whatever, they might just want a burger. It's real. It's not what it should be. It's not the perfect situation, but it's what people feel and what I imagine a lot of people would like to have after that kind of scenario. So, yeah, I'm for it. It's more real life than ideal.
I mean, I completely agree. The thing about it that I really like is it's really unusual. It's properly distinctive as a piece of work. I really like the fact that it's just a clear, like, audience insight. Like, that's obviously something that, like, loads of people are doing where they're kind of just having, like, a proper indulgent meal after they've given birth. I mean, that's a massive ordeal. And to be honest with you, I can empathise with this because if I've been through a big ordeal, obviously not childbirth, I like to eat something delicious.
When I get a horrible email, I like to get a Burger King. Yeah.
When I've had to record one of these podcasts with you guys, I like to have a nice burger.
That's painful for childbirth, isn't it?
No, that's not the point I'm making. The point I'm making is I think loads of people can empathise with. So there's a social film that went with it where there's like, it's all UGC stuff, like husbands like bringing in the Burger King like to the mother and they're like, oh my God, thank God. And there's like, within that, when people are biting in, they're like, they have like this look of like just pure like relief.
Nice.
And that is like, you know, you don't have to have given birth to understand that kind of like joy at having something delicious. So I just really like it as a piece of very human advertising and it's not obvious.
Mm. I agree. I'd like to see a series of it.
Yeah, be cool.
Yeah. Mm,
I like that. Someone should write that down.
The comms planner in me that though is like, how is this living within other stuff? Like, there's so many opportunities. Like, it was born of Mumsnet research. Like, is there like a Mumsnet partnership going in there? Like, is there like, what other things can Burger King be doing that could make this live throughout like all of their comms and like pulling into other things rather than just being these kind of like little isolated pops? But to your point, Harriet, there could be like a sort of a strategy that's going to emerge off the back of it where
Burger
we start
King,
getting more
sponsors one born every minute.
Yeah. Love that. Copyright Vicky,
we love a little bit of that. But yeah, to be honest, I was exactly of the same thinking. I think initially I was jarred because sometimes I can really get on my high horse about like nutrition and advertising and we shouldn't be advertising things because we as humans always pick the worst things.
I mean, she's not feeding the baby.
I know. So that's what I mean. So my initial reaction was that, but then I got back into, like, just get over it. She's literally just had a baby. Like, they've had a baby.
Yeah.
Eat your Burger King.
If someone's had a baby, let them do what they want.
I eat Burger King for less, bro. So, so yeah. So I think it should be Freak of the Week. And I think, by the sounds I've heard in this room so far...
Agree.
Gets a freak with a capital F.
We need one of those buzzers, like a golden buzzer.
Yes, and cash falling down.
Yeah, we'll have to ask producer Ben if he can find the budget for a big golden buzzer.
Golden buzzer. Or a green one.
He's giving you the middle finger again. Can't believe it.
Ben. Never liked you.
Okay, on to our main topic. So the US government, you may have seen, is considering...
I have seen the US government, yeah.
Well, I mean,
blonde
yeah.
guy. Oh, no, that's in a few months' time. Anyway.
This is not that. The US government is considering a breakup of Google following a court ruling that declared the company as an illegal monopoly in the online search market. So the move aims to prevent Google from leveraging its dominance in search to unfairly promote its other products, particularly as AI advances. This isn't actually new news, though, because the government's antitrust case against Google has been building for years, with concerns that exclusive deals with companies like Apple have allowed Google to solidify its position as the kind of default search engine on many devices. So I put the question to the floor. Do we think it will happen? Do we think that will be the breakup of Google? And secondly, what will this mean for the growth of companies such as Perplexity, for example, that are offering more of an interactive conversational approach to search?
I mean, firstly, love a bit of Perplexity. It's great.
I use
it all the time because it's just like, it's like mega Google. But I think I can't see it going ahead. This is the sort of thing that Google are just going to be like, you know, when Mr. Burns like lifts up the panel in his office and there's like an army of lawyers, like that's what Google have. So like they're just going to lawyer the hell up and there'll be like a big stalemate, like that will just go on for ages.
I'll disagree.
Yeah.
As strongly as well.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I mean, this isn't the only lawsuit that Google are fighting at the moment. There's a good few. So there's this one, which is the search one. There is the one against Google Play, which is their app store, which they've just been ruled against, which means that they have to open it to other apps, I think like other Android apps. So that one's done. But I think the biggest one and probably the most significant will be against Google, or sorry, the Department of Justice, so same that's doing it now, monopolising key digital advertising technology, so effectively Google's ad tech stack, which is where it controls in this... complex web of you know, Google properties so much of the industry's money is flowing through. So this is a separate case that's going on now. I can't actually remember exactly when this gets resolved. Yeah. But that one does look like to be some sort of existential threat to Google. So between this almost coordinated attack that's happening in the US and in the EU as well, there's other things going on. But there's a really, really a resounding position against Google. And actually, this, I don't think we can overstate how significant this could be for our ecosystem, because recently, very, I think it was on like Friday, the Department of Justice actually reached out to advertisers, and the other companies are now being brought into this. So they've asked advertisers about IAS and about Double Verify. So particularly in light of the Adalytics report. So now what we're seeing is that in the US, the Department of Justice is really, really turning a sharp eye towards the ad tech ecosystem, not just Google, everyone else around there. And there really seems to be quite a head of steam building behind. They want to get involved here. I think we will find... I mean, this comes at a time where you know, Google's under a massive pressure in the search space. Obviously, they've just been ruled against by the judge in the US. Also, their search environment is becoming less and less usable. I mean, the top, what, 5-6 links now are sponsored. If you actually want to find any useful information, you have to wait. It's almost under the fold now.
It's the dodgy AI as well.
Yeah, the dodgy AI. Yeah, what was the other thing that I saw recently? Someone said, you know, if you... the comparison. What's the difference between a sauce and a dressing? And it says, you know, a sauce is used to add texture to a to a whatever a recipe, whereas a dressing is used to mask a wound.
Yeah,
and it's like that's so it's so basic. And, but, you know, a couple of years ago, Google would have nailed that question, but because they're trying to just fold AI into it, because they understand that they're under massive pressure. Mm. Actually, they're becoming less effective as a result of it.
I mean, okay. I feel like I've been convinced now.
Yeah, I know. I think my thinking on this was, I was more thinking about like the why this is all going on. I think hearing you speak, actually, Charlie, it's making more sense as to why. I think that it's kind of undermining the industry a little bit, which we've all kind of known, because it's such a big player. Sometimes you just have to go with it because that's all that you can do. But initially, when I was thinking about it, I was just thinking that they are just the best. Isn't that not what all brands are trying to do? They are the biggest one. They are the market leader. We live in a capitalistic like society. And so essentially, have they just won the game and now we have to start again? Is that what's going on?
You raise a good point there, because actually their counterpoint, I want to say there, is the president of global affairs said that, look, this decision, the court's decision, recognises that Google offers the best search engine, but it concludes that we shouldn't be allowed to make it easily available.
Exactly.
So they're referring to the tens of billions of dollars that they pay each year to Apple and Samsung to be the default search engine. But it is the best. We know it's the best. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side of that, they stifle competition. So we live in capitalistic times, but they have been ruled to be monopolistic, which actually capitalism tries to fight against, because you need to have that even playing field.
I think that's banter.
So what are we saying then? The breakup will happen eventually, or we don't think it will?
Well, I mean, I think I'm also wondering if I've just been convinced because Charlie's in this fancy roll neck and it makes him seem intellectual. But I mean, he makes some good points.
Yeah, he makes a good point. Sorry, go on.
No, please, Bruce.
No, I'm unsure. I think there's been a lot of precedent set in terms of like the AT&T disbanding that was done many years ago when they were deemed to be monopolising the market, but they were a lot more obtuse about how they were doing this. Like, they were literally like, oh, we own the phone market, you aren't allowed to put any other phones on this, on the service, but we won't sell the phones, you can only rent them. Like, that is giving... You're being mean, guys. Like, stop it. Whereas Google, like, to Charlie's point, they just have a superior product in a lot of these spaces. So I don't know. And they have the army of Mr. Burns lawyers. I don't know where this is going, realistically.
What was Jack's quote? Lathering up the lawyers.
Yeah. Lathering up the lawyers.
Or was I just thinking about lathering up lawyers?
I've never said anything about lathering up lawyers.
I thought that wasn't what you said.
You can keep thinking about lathering up the lawyers.
Speaking about the lawyers will be getting a big grilling as well, because Google they've got some company policies that are a bit shady. So, like, everyone has their chats to delete within 24 hours. I think the good judge said he was like astonished or appalled or one of those sort of words about the lax business practice, almost bordering on shady.
You've got to say it in a US judge voice. You've got to be like, appalled.
I'm absolutely appalled at this.
I'm appalled.
I would also like the record to state that I do agree that they are stifling competition. Just let people understand that. Yeah. But I almost feel like the reasons for this are not what it seems.
Yeah,
that's that.
I will say one more thing. If anyone does want to learn some more about this sort of thing, if you want to look into it, because I said it really, really is big. Bookie, I know you hate X/Twitter, but there are three people who I recommend to follow: Jason Kint, Ariel Garcia, and Ryan Barwick.
Or,
if you want to stay across those sorts of things.
Or you could just tune into the Media Freak podcast, where we will update you when there's significant news.
We're going to do even more on this, aren't we? Jesus.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk about its progress.
I've had to cut my nails twice while we're talking about that.
Now, moving on, forgive me, Buki, for I have sinned. What's in Media and On this week? Hopefully it's some good ones.
Okay, we got a couple in here. So the first one is not quite a Media and On, but do you know what? I back the sentiment. This anonymous source has said, why aren't media owners throwing Halloween parties like they used to? Haven't received a LinkedIn invite in years. What's that all about? I'm going to shoot that to our resident media owner.
I can see the eyes looking at me. Yeah, I mean, we're not doing the one this year. We're taking some people to Oktoberfest on Thursday, which will be fun. But
The thought of Oktoberfest with Charlie is pretty scary.
Yeah, I know. I don't think any of us would survive.
I think it's a good idea. I think people should do it more. More parties.
Did any of you ever go to the old LinkedIn bashes?
I don't think I've ever went to a LinkedIn party. That sounds...
They used to be off the chain.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I did a Spotify Halloween party.
Ooh, that sounds like it'd be pretty good too.
But I've definitely been, whether it was Halloween Jaegerified or not.
Did you have to post afterwards being like, I did 17 Jaeger bombs at the LinkedIn party and here's what it told me about direct sales?
I tell you what, maybe Global could host one just for us.
This is it, basically.
We can host a party just for us without Global's help. That's fine.
Well, maybe we should include Global.
Maybe.
Okay, the next one, and we're going to actually need some help, so lock in here, guys. So, oh no.
Is it actual advice?
Yeah, someone's actually asking for advice.
Let's not be surprised.
It says, I work on an account that's very top heavy. We have 3 people at lead and partner level at around 25% each across client leadership and like planning and buying, but in an oversight capacity. But there's not enough junior resource, e.g. we only have 1 exec who's been at the business for a while and is actually really good and deserves a promotion. I'm assuming that means in my opinion. We are struggling to get campaigns planned and launched due to lack of hands-on junior resource, but apparently, quote marks, there is no wiggle room in the commercials to hire or to promote someone who is doing a really good job. All the while, I'm unsure what that 75% of client lead and partner is for, and no one will explain.
Oh, dear.
It sounds like they're covering their own backs.
In what way?
They just want to be scoped on something.
Oh, as in like they're just making sure they are working.
They want to be X percent on a client, okay, just in case.
So what advice could we give?
Isn't doing well
to our friend here.
Quit. I think if you're doing the job well enough that everything, the wheels keep turning, and you're working all the hours of the day, you have to remember that a business is a business. They'll be looking at it from top down. Someone will be making a decision, looking and going, well, it's still working. Why would I change it? So you have to be the one to be that change. That might mean you have to leave.
All that silent quitting vibes, just stop doing so well.
Yeah, I know, but that's terrible advice. Silent quitting is like the...
Oh, I love it when old man Jack comes out.
No, I'm not. That is not...
Silent quitting?
Yeah, it's just being shit at your job so that...
Yeah, but...
Oh, what? No, don't do that.
Hang on, but if you have voiced that you need more resource, but they are only hiring above you...
Yeah.
I think that gives you license to just, you know, stop going above and beyond... Yeah. Because now you're making it look like you're not stressed doing this. Well, meanwhile, you're working yourself into the ground.
Am I right in saying that they haven't hired anyone? It's just that they've got people more senior scoped on the account and they haven't... They're saying no wiggle room for the commercials.
That's all we've got.
I'm very sorry that you're in that position. You're obviously more than capable of being able to do this job because it sounds like you're doing an exec role, a manager's role and a director's role all in one. So I think you'd have... a very good grounds to find something and snap something up very quickly. I mean, but I would also say you need to outright say this again to them and be like, well, you know, if there's no wiggle room in the commercials, then I'm sorry, but the BD's going to have to get down and dirty and start planning again.
Get down and dirty. Yeah.
Well, they are. They're going to have to help get their hands dirty and plan.
So I've got a suggestion for how you could turn this into a positive. I think if you're backing yourself and you're delivering on this and you're doing good work, then think about how you can use it as a bit of self-promotion, because you've clearly got access to very senior people within your business. Make sure that they're knowing about it and just like keep peppering them with the stuff that you're doing. CCing them in on all of the emails, even if, you know, because if they're that percentage... That's a bit of an inbox bomb, so they can see what you're doing.
Jack, this person sounds like they're running the account and they already know it. Yeah, I think we're too far down that road now.
That's only being taken advantage of. Take it into your own hands and look elsewhere. And even, you know, you can even drop in that you're looking elsewhere if you want to really light a fire under their ass.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean,
you know, something needs to change.
Publicists have started a new office on Mars. I mean, you can transfer out there.
Nice. Yeah, and just go to a Halloween party. Go to a Halloween party, get your network... connections and
see if show heroes will take you through a few steins at Oktoberfest.
Well, anyway, thank you very much for that, Pookie, as always. That wraps up this week. Thanks so much for listening to the Media Freak podcast. If you like listening to our freak this week, remember to like, subscribe, tell your friends, and follow us on Instagram. Loads of good content on there. Keep your media and on stories coming in, and we'll be back in 2 weeks in another location right in the heart of the media scene. So, a huge thanks to Global for hosting us again.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And the Media Freak podcast is a Gimme Sugar production. Bye.